This is New Books in Political Science. My name is Heath Brown, and today I'll be speaking with Andre Gillespie, the author of The New Black Politician, Cory Booker, Newark, and Post-Racial America. I hope you enjoy today's interview. Welcome, Andre Gillespie, to New Books in Political Science.
Thank you.
It's a real pleasure to have read your book, and I look forward to talking to you about it. Before we get to the meat of the book, maybe you can just tell us a little bit about who you are, where you've been, and where you are now.
So I am an associate professor of political science at Emory University. I am a PhD graduate of Yale University, and that's part of the reason why I ended up writing this book. I met Cory Booker in 2001 when I was getting ready to write my dissertation prospectus on minority voter mobilization. Cory came to give a talk at Yale Law School where he mentioned that he canvassed, and that was the core of my dissertation. So I started talking to him about canvassing afterwards, at which point he told me he would be running for mayor the next year. And the next thing I knew, I was asking if I could come to Newark to run a voting experiment. And hence, I ended up in Newark in 2002, witnessed that campaign against Sharp James. And the idea for the book started to germinate, but it took about 4 years before I realized what exactly I would be doing and that I would be writing a book.
Yeah, it's, you know, so the story that you tell, and you tell in such a narratively approachable way, and that covers sort of this 10-year or so time period, but your direct involvement in it really gives it this flavor of closeness, I think, that makes it a very interesting book, not just for academics, but I don't know if you feel like you've reached outside of the academy, but it sure does feel like the kind of book that people outside could read. Have you had any conversations with people who are not in the field of political science about the book?
Certainly. I mean, in terms of talking with reporters and doing interviews like this, you know, it was my hope and it's always my goal for my scholarship to be accessible to people. And so I want to be able to write something that can be meaningful to an academic audience, but that is readable and approachable enough that people outside can gain some insights from it and actually be able to enjoy the work as well.
Yeah, I think you've met that ambition in a real interesting way. So let's talk about the book itself. In the start of the book, you use this quote from former Newark Mayor Kenneth Gibson, and he said, "Wherever America's cities are going, Newark will get there first." You use this to justify your case study as in some ways generalizable. Mm-hmm. So before we get to your evidence. And you sort of allude to it just a moment ago. How did you choose Newark to study over other cities with similar trajectories?
So there are actually very few cities that have the profile of Newark. And so the type of city that would be ideal for this kind of study would be a city with a long history of African-American mayoral leadership and consistent African-American mayoral leadership. So Newark has had a black mayor for almost 43 years now. And it is similar to only three other cities in the United States. So Washington, D.C. has had a black mayor for more than 35 years. Atlanta has had a black mayor for almost 40 years now. And Detroit has had a black mayor for more than 40 years now. So there are very few cities where you can actually sort of test what happens when you've had long-term African-American leadership and when you've had the emergence of a new vanguard of a young black leader trying to challenge the older black establishment for power. So that's part of the justification of looking at a city like Newark. How I ended up in Newark, you know, was completely random and by happenstance, but it's the type of place that lent itself well to this type of discussion. And so in political science, people are often talking about convenient samples and other kinds of things. And I got a little bit of pushback for picking a place like Newark, but picking a city like Newark to do the study in is very different than, say, picking black politics in Wichita, Kansas, which doesn't have the same history. And so this was a completely justifiable choice. And frankly, in a discipline where we've seen more than enough studies of Boston, New Haven, Chicago, and Oakland, you know, I think we need to be really honest about how we usually pick our cases. Most of the time, there is some element of convenience that is involved in picking our case sites. I think mine was perfectly justified. If I had picked another type of city to do this work in, you know, I could see getting pushback, but I think in my case, it was perfectly justified.
Yeah, well, at Seton Hall, we love Newark, so anytime someone studies it and we have the chance to read about it, we like it. So in New Jersey, we like that a lot. So one of the things that you do in the book is you build a theoretical argument that you refer to as elite displacement. What does this theory help you to do in the book? What is the way in which this theoretical side to the book help you explain the evidence that you collect?
So the main question that's kind of driving my research is whether or not the decisions that young black politicians make in terms of challenging and trying to unseat older black politicians has consequences for future elections or consequences for subsequent governance. And so I really want to get at this question that older black leaders have failed in their responsibilities to improve the communities that they started to lead, and that there's a younger, better educated, more qualified group of young politicians who are waiting in the wings who should be allowed to take over. And then so I developed the term elite displacement to describe the process by which young, ambitious black politicians with few demonstrable ties to the black political establishment try to supplant older, more established black politicians. And elite displacement involves taking advantage of the outsider status to gain sympathy in mainstream media circles, to garner volunteer and financial support from outside of the city or outside of the black political community in an attempt to try to overwhelm the established black politician. The other part of elite displacement that I think is actually really interesting is when you see younger black politicians really taking advantage of stereotypes that persist about African-American leaders and using those stereotypes to try to position themselves as being anti-stereotypical or counter-stereotypical, and thus to elicit greater support from the outside community such that they can get more money, more volunteers, more earned media attention. And so I argue in the book that elite displacement is a very effective strategy, but that people who use it need to consider both the positive and the negative externalities of using it. And so while it might be great to get media attention, young black politicians need to consider that they may actually be inadvertently reinforcing certain stereotypes about African Americans that could actually come back to haunt them later. And it's the type of thing that can really and unnecessarily engender a lot of tension between older black political leaders, some of whom you're going to need for institutional memory once you actually come into positions of power.
Yeah, and this all sort of brings us to the complex case of Cory Booker, the focus of your book. So how would you describe his background prior to his arrival in Newark in the 1990s? What came before his very rapid emergence in the city?
So school, for lack of a better term. So Cory Booker was born in Washington, D.C., was raised in Harrington Park, New Jersey, in Bergen County. It really is, without traffic, only about 30 minutes away from Newark, but in many instances, it's just a world apart. So he grew up in a majority white community. He grew up in a stable, loving home with two parents who were executives at IBM. He didn't want for anything physically. He was educated in good schools. He was educated, in a community that didn't have the problems that a lot of urban communities were facing in the 1970s and 1980s, and he thrived in it. He won a football scholarship to Stanford University. He played football at Stanford for a couple of years, excelled academically, won a Rhodes Scholarship, got a master's degree from Oxford, and then went to Yale Law School. So you're looking at sort of the pinnacle of academic achievement. Cory Booker's been there, done that, and has done everything. While he was at Yale Law School, he developed an interest in public interest law, and he moved to Newark while he was still a law student at Yale, and started to work in clinics, and eventually, once he graduated, won a public interest law fellowship that would allow him to do tenants' rights law. And would actually free up time for him to be able to run for office. And so, there's some conflicting sort of stories about how this happened. But in 1998, Booker challenged a four-term incumbent on Newark City Council in the Central Ward, a man by the name of George Branch, for the city council seat. So if you put somebody like Cory Booker, the Yale Law School educated former Rhodes Scholar, next to George Branch, somebody who didn't have the same educational opportunities, you could see that there would be a nice sharp contrast. And Booker ended up winning that race in a runoff election. He comes on city council, and immediately there were lots of people who were aligned with Sharp James, who saw him as a threat and saw him as somebody who was ambitious and wanted to be mayor. And so his reception on city council was actually somewhat hostile, to be quite honest. And so he had a lot of trouble being able to form alliances and get his initiatives passed on city council. He, as a result of that, decided that he wasn't incorporated enough as a member of city council to really make a change. The best thing that he could do would be to run for mayor. And so he challenged Sharp James as mayor in 2002. He was 32 years old at the time. And he's going to turn 33 over the course of that campaign. And Sharp James was twice his age. And Sharp James had served for 16 years as a member of city council, and at that point, 16 years as mayor. And so there were a lot of people who thought that, one, Booker had been very instrumental in terms of his entire political career, and it come to Newark with the express purpose of trying to run to be mayor of the city. But then there were also people who thought that he had kind of come out of term. He was very young. He's, you know, less than 5 years out of law school, and he is also a relatively new member on the city council. And so there are people who thought he should have waited a little bit longer before he ran. And so the 2002 campaign became this really vitriolic campaign. It was the most expensive municipal race in New Jersey history to date. And a lot of the rhetoric around the race focused on racial authenticity. So Sharp James and his surrogates made the charge that Booker wasn't black enough to lead the city of Newark. And when the race came down, it was a close race for Sharp James. Sharp James was a person who was used to winning by wide margins. He was used to, in some cases, running unopposed. Booker came within about 7 points of beating him in 2002. So that was actually a relatively close race, even though by most political science standards, we wouldn't call that a close race. In particular, if we look at sort of the geographic breakdown of the vote, Sharp James lost two wards. He lost the North Ward and the East Ward. So those are the majority Latino and the majority Portuguese wards in the city. And Sharp James beat Booker in the parts of Newark that are considered historically black. And so it's with that environment that Corey goes into the 2006 race. It's very clear he's going to run again. It's not quite clear whether or not Sharp James is going to run again. And he makes some efforts to reach out and to reconcile with members of the black political elite. There is some fracturing of relationships between Sharp James and Latinos during the interval period between 2002 and 2006. But he keeps on raising money. He starts a nonprofit. He builds his national media profile. And the juggernaut is just too big for Sharp James to go against. So Sharp James chooses at the last minute to bow out in 2006, leaving Deputy Mayor Ron Rice Sr., who was a state senator, to run against him with virtually no money. Booker and his team outspent Rice and his team by a margin of 25-1. Even Ron Rice Sr.'s son was running on Booker's ticket for the West Ward Council. So, I mean, it was just a really lopsided race, and Booker was actually able to coast to victory very easily.
Yeah, much of your... So some of the book is sort of based around these two elections, but in another way, the book is a lot about change and sort of how the establishment deals with change. I had the pleasure to work for Congressman Donald Payne in Washington when I was just out of college, and in addition to being an alum of Seton Hall University, served the city of Newark for a long time before his recent passing. Mm-hmm. And in the book, you describe this kind of this tenuous relationship between Cory Booker and the Payne family. And I think it's very indicative of how he's sort of stepping into situations, and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work. And so I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about how the two interacted. That is, Cory Booker and the different generations of the Payne family interacted at different points, and when it worked and when the relationship didn't work so well.
So I'm going to make the assumption that not all of your audience lives in Metro Newark or in Metro New York. So for those outside, New Jersey is a place that where political machines actually still dominate. And so oftentimes in the city of Newark, when we're talking about political machines, there are a certain small number of families that have been very politically influential in the city of Newark. So you're looking at the Rice family, the Payne family, the Sharif family, the Adubato family, and people who choose to associate with them. And so part of the charge of anybody who aspires to be a transformational leader in a city of Newark you have to learn to work with those families and risk being co-opted by them, or you have to completely supplant them. And so the story of Newark is actually really interesting, is that those families actually are still very, very prominent in politics today, despite Booker's ascension. And so that actually is an interesting thing, that Booker has to contend with these families. The Sharif family at one point was actually helping Booker get elected. And so this is a family that until recently really hasn't held political office, but they've usually been the behind-the-scenes strategists for a number of races, including Cory Booker's 98, 2002, and 2006 wins. The son in the family who now holds political office, Jaron Sharif, who's the Central Ward City Councilman, broke with the Booker machine. And so the Bookers and the Sharifs actually have not been aligned together for the last 3 or 4 years. The Payne family controlled black votes in the South Ward, in Newark in particular, and they've been aligned with the Adubato family. So Steve Adubato, who is the, for all intents and purposes, the political boss of the North Ward, is a social worker who runs a very, very prominent social service outfit in the North Ward in Newark that includes a senior center and a charter school and lots of other social services. And so those two families have been aligned with one another, and so they have controlled county government. So you've usually seen an ally of Adubato who was in charge of, who's the county executive, so and Joseph DiVincenzo, and then the Essex County Democratic Party chair is a member of the Payne family, and the Payne family had state assemblymen who were also part of their family and other operatives. So in 2006 in particular, when Cory Booker had an opening on his slate for an at-large council seat, and he didn't already have somebody who was running with him on his seat, he interviewed a number of people to kind of serve in that seat, including Raz Baraka, the son of Amiri Baraka, also a very important left family politically to contend with in the city of Newark. He ended up choosing Donald Payne Jr., the late congressman's son, and actually now the current congressman, in part because he was a better fit for the team than some of the other people like Raz Baraka or Bessie Walker, Gail Chahill Jenkins. And so that relationship has always been somewhat tenuous. Payne, all of them have their own names on which they can run. And so helping Booker actually helps them, but the Paynes actually help Booker as well. And so that alliance was mutually beneficial, but there have been instances where the Bookers and the Paynes have actually broken ranks. And so we could look at a 2007 race where the Bookers or the Adubatos and the Paynes actually split on who to support for the state Senate. So Steve Adubato wanted to put up Teresa Ruiz as the state Senate nominee to replace Sharp James when he chose to resign or to not seek another term in office. And William Payne, who was the late Congressman Donald Payne's brother, really wanted that seat. And so there was a huge rift between the Payne and the Adubato families on that issue. Booker sided with Adubato, supported Teresa Ruiz in that particular seat, and she ended up winning. And then the Payne family has also sort of sometimes opposed Booker on substantive issues. So the Payne family ended up opposing Mayor Booker's municipal utility authority plans to try to come up with a new revenue funding stream using the city's water authority to be able to do that. So we've seen instances where they haven't actually been perfectly aligned with one another. And I would argue, as I do in the book, and there are more recent developments that I think more, that it actually shows the resiliency of the old political establishment, the old ethnic political establishment that predates Cory Booker and actually most of us who are under the age of 40 in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, just sort of putting this together, and, you know, some from a distance, some of the names sort of are lost, but, you know, the closer you get, the more these pieces start to fit together in such an interesting way. So you mentioned that sort of he loses in 2002 and wins in 2006. Is this more a case of the city of Newark changing or Cory Booker changing? Is this him learning some political lessons that he may have been naive to in the earlier race? Or is the city undergoing a change in a way that just makes his candidacy more possible in the later election?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, Booker definitely does learn some things after the 2002 loss, and you can see in his willingness to kind of reach out to folks who would have actually been amenable to him. So in particular, he always had a more cordial relationship with the late city councilman and former assemblyman Donald Tucker than other members of council. And so he, you know, aligns with him, really deepens that friendship after Payne dies. He actually endorsed his wife for the state assembly seat that he once held. So you can see that there was some savvy that was definitely going on there. There was definitely some savvy in making sure that he was sensitive to the cultural concerns of African-American Newarkers. So in particular, there were people who didn't always like the fact that they didn't see African-Americans in positions of prominence in his campaign. And so the difference between 2002 and 2006 is that you see more African-Americans in very, very prominent places. I mean, I can tell you a story. I am African-American. I remember one time dealing with one of his campaign aides who didn't know me. And he and I told him I was coming in, told him, you know, what the project was about and that I was going to be canvassing as part of my methodology, which is participant observation. And I knew, I'd already heard from people that they usually sent out-of-town visitors into the North or the East Ward because people might be more welcome there or less likely to get heckled. And I very quickly let this campaign worker know that, hey, I'm Black, so if you want to send me to the Central South or West Ward, that's okay. And then he was like, okay, so you know the city of Newark. It was like, yeah, kind of been hanging out here for 4 years.
Right.
So, yeah, I know, but I know that this is kind of what you're thinking. And so there was definitely a greater sensitivity to it in 2006. You know, people talk about demographic changes in the city, and, you know, the city is definitely undergoing a demographic change. For the last two censuses, the city has had a small African-American majority in that Blacks make up about 52% of the city of Newark, and we see a growing Latino population in the city. You know, those changes are likely to continue, and so we could very well be looking by the 2020 census out of Newark where Blacks make up the plurality and not the majority of residents in the city. And so you can definitely see those changes happening in the city, but at the same time, I don't necessarily think that it's the demographic change that ushers Booker in. I think for, you know, the mood, and I talked with a friend who, you know, I often talk with about these things, who was coming into the city and working and doing other kinds of things. It was just her educated guess. It was that by 2006, people knew who Booker was to a greater degree than they did in 2002. And so he didn't quite look at, like, the newcomer that he did in 2002. And so people were more willing to trust him. And also, just, I mean, you can't discount sort of the impact of money and organization. Ronald Rice Sr. had 6 weeks to campaign because Sharp James refused to get out of the race soon enough and no money. And so under those circumstances, it would have been very, very impossible for Ron Rice Sr., to be able to win. You know, you can also argue that Ron Rice Sr.'s campaign style might not have lent itself well to being able to win a race. He's notorious for not being handled and for doing things his own way, and sometimes those don't always fall into the lines of what we would consider our campaign strategy.
Right.
But, you know, it's one of those things where he would have had an uphill battle. There's just no way that you could do what Booker and his team were able to do on a budget of $150,000 when the opposition has $6 million. Like, right. You just can't do it. So, I mean, I think it was greater familiarity. I think he made some really savvy moves to not alienate himself, Booker, that is, completely from the African-American community. And I think by 2006, people were ready to accept him as the change and ready to accept him as a successor to Sharp James in ways that they weren't 4 years earlier.
Yeah. And is the state now ready to accept Cory Booker? He's sort of on his way out, which sort of begs two questions. One is, you know, what is his future hold? And also, what is the future of Newark hold?
Right.
Has he built an infrastructure that he will leave behind, whether he wins a statewide race or not? Has he groomed someone, or are we going to see one of these established families regain this position that they sort of, they didn't give up exactly, but they, you know, a newcomer came in.
Right. So, I mean, you know, that's sort of the test of sort of whether or not Booker's leadership has been transformational. If we look at who the leading contenders are to succeed Booker in 2014, it looks like a younger version of the parents. And some of them actually have what we would consider sort of more progressive or quote unquote post-racial politics than their parents did. But when the names come up of the people who appear to want to be mayor, the names that you'll hear are Ron Rice Jr. or John James, Sharp James's oldest son, or Raz Baraka or Darren Sharif or Aníbal Ramos. And so of those, four of the five are the sons of prominent activists or politicians. And so in that respect, it looks like the old machines, the old politics where families are play a very, very influential role in Newark politics hasn't changed that much. And so in that respect, I'd argue that Booker's not particularly transformational. There is, and I talk about this a little bit in my book, some concern also that Booker has been able to draw a lot of attention, very positive attention, and actually a lot of philanthropic dollars to Newark on the force of his personality. But because people are attached to Newark or attached to Corey and are really drawn to Corey, I think it becomes a question of whether or not they will maintain their commitment to Newark once he's no longer mayor of the city. And so if I were in Booker's position, I would probably be trying to shore up those public-private partnerships to make sure that they develop a connection with people in Newark, with the organizations in Newark, with the social service agencies that are working in Newark to make sure that those relationships maintain themselves even after Booker is there. There is a fear, even by people who are, you know, are very close to Booker and really believe in what it is that he's doing, who are concerned that there are some people who will forget to continue to donate to Newark once Booker isn't in the official role of being the cheerleader for the city.
Right.
At least, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say you know the mayor. You know Mayor Booker. You described a couple of direct encounters you have with him. Is this a concern he has? I mean, how aware is he of some of these concerns? Is it a priority for him, or is a busy guy? He certainly has busy things ahead of him. But do you have a sense of whether He's sort of in touch with those concerns about his legacy?
You know, this is actually something that I've not talked to him personally about. So I'm not quite sure, you know, where his head is on this. You know, I find it hard to imagine that this isn't something that he, you know, isn't thinking about. But, you know, I wish I could answer that question. It's something I've talked about with other people who are kind of closer or in the inner circle. And, you know, it's something that's registered, but it's one of those, it's the empirical question that I can't gauge until, you know, 2 or 5 or 10 years after, you know, Booker stepped down as mayor of Newark, whether that's in 2 years or next year or whether that's 5 years from now, you know, we'll wait to see.
Right, right. And this also does kind of bring us to your next project. This book has come out and has received lots of praise. What's next for you? Do you have a new book project? Is it an extension of this project? Or are you delving into a new area of study?
So I have new book projects out or that are in the works right now. And I always say that everything is inspired by Newark because Newark is such an inspirational place. And I've actually told Corey that he's my muse. So when certain things happen, even if it's about other people or it's about that black politics broadly, and they go back to the fundamental questions that I started to generate in Newark when I first started to hang out there a decade ago. So, you know, I'm very interested in the consequences of using race-neutral campaign strategies broadly. And so with that, Newark was a great place to write this book. I've done a little bit of work on sort of who the next mayor of Newark could be, and so that'll come out in an edited volume later this year. And there's still more work to be done there just because there were some data issues in terms of how the census is blocking off our voter districts. And so that's stuff that I can actually come back to and redo once we actually have a complete data set. But, you know, I'm very interested in Booker in terms of sort of how he fares as a U.S. Senate candidate, presumably next year. You know, one of the things that's actually very interesting about this race is that, you know, for the first time, he's going to have to run against a white challenger, which is not something he's had to do before. So the things that he could do in contrasting himself to Sharp James are just not an option for him in running against Frank Lautenberg, who has a much, much different profile. It also would be true that should he win the Democratic nomination, he would be running against a Republican for the first time. And so even in a state like New Jersey, where, you know, this is a state that's definitely very friendly to Democrats, that's you know, okay. He should actually probably be fine, but it would be a question of, well, how does it look when he's not actually running against an old style racialized black person who might be a little threatening or off-putting to non-black voters? So I'm actually very curious to see what that looks like.
Right.
In general, I'm interested in deracialization broadly. As an academic discipline, we define deracialization by knowing it when we see it. So we can compare Cory Booker to, say, Jesse Jackson Jr., and we know one of them is more racialized than the other. It's just pretty obvious to us. But we are now trying to figure out what is the best way to measure that and what's the best way to actually define what cross-racial appeal is. So I started doing some more experimentally driven studies to actually try to really hone in on what characteristics of deracialized politicians are the ones that actually elicit support or actually could repel voters. And so those are more broad, more abstract. You know, it's more mathy and more scientific in the traditional sense of the word, and less soaking and poking and hanging out with voters, which I actually would argue is equally scientific. And then I've got some other projects. So, you know, I and a co-author are working on a textbook about African-American politics, have a project that looks like it's in the works on President Obama. And so we're going to look at some of the same sort of challenges in talking about race when you are trying to be racially transcendent at the same time by looking at the first term and the first couple of months of the second term of President Obama as well.
Well, I hope when these, it sounds like possibly three or four additional books come out, you will come back and talk again. Andre Gillespie, I really enjoyed reading your book, The New Black Politician, Cory Booker, Newark, and Post-Racial America. The book is published by NYU Press, available at their website, I assume, at Amazon.com as well.
Yeah.
Andre, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.